This podcast is brought to you by Learn Prime. Hone your development skills at learn.thoughtbot.com.
Giant robot smashing into other giant robots.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Giant Robots Smashing into Other Giant Robots podcast. My name is Ben Orenstein, and I'm here today with Peter Cooper. Hey, Peter.
Hello.
You were a huge online Ruby presence when I was kind of getting started in the world. You were running Ruby Inside, and now it seems like recently you have transitioned over to like an email weekly sender overlord of some kind. You've got like Ruby Weekly and JavaScript Weekly and sending out thousands of these things. And is that a fair assessment of the movement of your online persona?
Yeah, there's definitely been a trajectory to it.
Yeah.
Which kind of went from, if I just jump back to sort of how it all began.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into how I got into Ruby because it's kind of boring, but got into Ruby and Rails just like many people did. Mm-hmm. And because I was really heavily into blogging like quite early on. So I was blogging about my experiments and what I was doing with Ruby and so on. And an editor called, I think it was Keir Whitaker now. He used to work with A-Press. He does some Ubuntu books and stuff now. He got in touch and said, oh, we're looking for someone to write a Ruby book for us. And obviously, I'd never been approached to write a book or anything like that in my life. So kind of one of those bucket list things, I guess, you know, you think, oh, be cool to write a book.
And that was like a direct result of the blogging.
Exactly. Yeah. So it followed on from that. And then because I knew that blogs were good to promote stuff, I created the Ruby Inside blog, which actually the name was based on, this is where I'm going to go off onto a tangent, was based on something that Jeffrey Grossenbuck said on the then reasonably new Rails podcast, where he was talking to people at Intel about using Ruby and Rails. And he says, you know, you could be like Ruby Inside Intel, because the whole Intel Inside thing.
Right.
And so I just stole that as the name, got blogging to promote the book, but actually turned out that wasn't the main thing I ended up doing. I ended up just writing about Ruby. People followed on, and it just kind of blew up and become huge. And so that eventually leapfrogged into, you know, kind of almost like a domino effect into the email, just because I found that email had a really high engagement. And it was getting to a point where I was linking to other people more than perhaps I was producing my own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And email's quite a good fit for that. So,
yeah. That initial thing to me is interesting, where this book deal happened out of blogging. And like, there's this phenomenon that I see over and over again, which is people just like writing what they're learning and not like proclaiming themselves an expert, but just saying, here's some stuff I discovered. And then pretty quickly you establish yourself almost as an expert, and things fall out of that that are kind of awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you can see so many people in our community that have done that. So one that stands out to me is perhaps Greg Pollock and Jason Cypher. They no longer work together, unfortunately, but then they both kind of came on the scene with the podcasting they were doing, with the Ruby Show. I don't even sure it was called the Ruby Show then, but they were podcasting together. And they also produced those funny videos for RailsConf. I don't know if you've seen them, where it's like the Mac versus PC videos, but Rails versus like PHP and Java and stuff like that. And just the fact that they were producing stuff and pushing it out there, it was entertaining, kind of put them on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Greg was able to build a whole consultancy off the back of that, which, you know, I'm pretty sure is quite common to a lot of consultancies, probably Fortbot included to a certain extent, where just kind of becoming well-known and constantly putting a bit of yourself out into the world all the time, things tend to come back to you one way or another. So it seems to work for me, and it seems to work for a lot of people. It's a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. So can you talk more about the newsletters, the weekly things you're sending out these days?
So, I mean, it all began in the Ruby world, but then I used the kind of, I just stole the Mark Zuckerberg approach of beginning one area, and then once you think there's an overlap with another area, they move into that area.
Yeah.
So it moved from Ruby to JavaScript, HTML5, and now we're doing things like we've got a general kind of data storage database one, Postgres, just a whole ton of them. We're now at about 182,000 subscribers across the whole lot. But the main ones are still the Ruby, JavaScript, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Although the sad thing is that it started with Ruby. Ruby was the biggest for a while. JavaScript, when it came out, very quickly overtook it. And then HTML5 Weekly very quickly overtook Ruby Weekly and is now almost double subscribers, so even though they're much younger. So the Ruby one has been growing not the least out of all of them. In terms of the big ones, it's, more of a plateau than the others, unfortunately. But that's just because of what the industry is going through. And you know, I've seen articles over the last few weeks where someone was saying, oh, you know, Ruby's kind of reached this Java-esque position in terms of reputation. And well, not in a bad reputation, but kind of as a, you know, a tried and tested and you know, we're not seeing hundreds of thousands of people suddenly going, wow, let's suddenly get into Ruby all of a sudden. It's slowed down a bit. But now everyone's like, oh, Node. And Node's going to go out for exactly the same thing in a year or two. So, yeah.
So what are the formats of these the newsletters you send out? What are they like?
So basically, they do go out in HTML and plain text. So there are some people that, you know, like to see it very, very plain. And we make sure we have the format for that. But then most people read it in HTML format, and that also goes up onto the web. So some people get the email, and I know they just click on the button that says read this on the web, and then they just do it all through their browser instead. Which works quite well for us because the code is pretty much the same behind the email and the web version, so they don't miss out on anything.
Okay, and content-wise, these are sort of like a collection of links of to interesting stuff from the week before?
Yeah, so we have like a featured section, which is the stuff that, you know, we think we should check out, or perhaps events, things that are very timely. We usually have a sponsor in there as well, but then, yeah, we break it down to things that you should read, things you can watch and listen to, which has sometimes included your videos.
Thanks.
And yeah, and then we sort of usually have like either like sometimes we have a sponsor at the end, or we have a kind of a last but not least type thing, which is just a kind of a fun or flippant thing we had at the end. Oh, and obviously we include like libraries, code releases and stuff like that as well in there for each of those topics. So we are experimenting with a more open format for some of the newer ones. So we've got a mobile web weekly, which is pretty much what it says. Is curated by two people, one from Adobe, one from Telerik. And the way that works is it's just item following on from item. There's no, they're not broken down into read this, use this as code. It's just like 10 items, and you just kind of sift through the headlines. So we try and make sure the headlines are good for that. People like that format as well. So we're always, you know, experimenting with what works.
Yeah. So you, it sounds like there's more people than you working on this.
Kind of. I mean, I'm currently the only person that's like fully 100% full on with this. You know, there are other people that help with the business, like my wife, for example, and we had editors who sort of sometimes come and go. So we had Dr. Axel Rauschmeier. He's quite well known in the JavaScript space. He was the editor of JavaScript Weekly for 18 months, but is now started up a training business, so had to go, unfortunately. But we do have other curators involved, some paid, some not. It depends on what it is. And I mean, some of our venues aren't commercialized at all. So we've got Bitcoin Weekly, for example, which, you know, there's no advertising or anything like that in there. It's just run by a guy who came to us and he said, yeah, I really want to do this. Let's just do it. You know, it's not necessarily as a business or whatever. So it doesn't, it's not completely free to me in terms of the time and the effort, but it's as close as I can get to it at the moment with the technology. It's not taking me hours every week to just put something out. So
gotcha.
Yeah, it works quite well.
What do you use for sending your email?
We use MailChimp at the moment. The funny thing is, the guy that actually runs MailChimp, he's like, oh, you know, you should be using Mandrill instead, and like kind of homebrew it a bit more. And Mandrill is one of their services. Because I'm not actually using a lot of the stuff that MailChimp offers, so I'm pretty much using it just as a list and to do the sending. But I don't use any of the template stuff. I put everything finished up through their API. And it's, I spend like 10 seconds on their site, just like check, click, send. So we should probably build our own stuff on top of their more lower level stuff. But yeah, haven't quite got there yet. It's always a time angle involved.
Sure. So is this your primary like income producing endeavor, is like Cooper Press?
Yes.
Okay.
That became true like a couple of years ago when it started off. There was no advertising in it at all. There was no money really from it. It was all kind of off of the back of Ruby Inside, which, you know, at that point was a bigger deal for me. But that's kind of almost been abandoned, unfortunately. I'm probably in a lot of trouble with some of the Ruby community for just kind of leaving it abandoned. Would like to bring it back at some point, but yeah, email seems to be where it is for me at the moment.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard that from a couple other people, that, you know, blogging versus email, like email engagement's really high. It seems like advertising is probably a little bit better in email, things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
So if that's where the money and effectiveness is, then that's where you went.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it wasn't something that was started as a money-making endeavor, actually. I only started the newsletters because I sort of saw a lot of stuff that was going on with, like, Groupon. Oh, I'm trying to think of some of the names of the different companies, but there's a lot of like companies that are doing like lifestyle email newsletters, and it was like Daily Candy and stuff like that. And it just seemed like there was a renaissance of this stuff. And a guy called Jason L. Baptiste, he runs OnSwipe. He was like, you know, if I could run any business right now, it would be a email newsletter business. And he doesn't actually run an email newsletter business, but it was like, if I can't do the thing I'm on now, that's what I'd do. And I was like, well, he's quite a smart guy, so it can't be a bad idea. So I just tried it, just so that I could get in before anyone else tried it. Because obviously if someone else started a Ruby newsletter up at the time, I probably would have thought, oh, it's like, I don't want to compete with that.
Yeah.
So I got in quite early with that.
Yep.
And it's just gone from there. So, yeah, worked out well.
Can you give me, I don't know if this is, if you are willing to talk about this publicly, like a sense of like what an ad costs in like JavaScript Weekly, for example?
Well, actually, in the footer of some but not all of the newsletters, you can actually access our media kit, so you can actually see what things cost. So, you know, take Ruby Weekly, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking several hundred dollars for the primary sponsorship of an issue. Mm-hmm. But then we also run job ads as well, which people can take out. And they're not actually that expensive, but you know, we have free in each one, so they're about $120 each. So that, you know, it all adds up. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the next big VC kind of funded business, but in terms of like, you know, an income for sort of a very small group of people, primarily me, it's you know, it works out okay.
Yep. So it sounds like you can start up, if you have a topic you want to have a newsletter on and can find the subscribers, like you can spin one up and it's maybe $1,000 a week or so in terms of income per.
It depends. I mean, well, not necessarily a new one, because, I mean, this is the thing. We don't tend to have advertising in newsletters that we're currently kind of ramping up.
Right, that makes sense.
I think it just puts people off, and advertisers, there's just perhaps not the inventory there for advertisers who are interested. So, yeah, try and boot them up.
Yep.
And then once they boot it up, then try and make it more of a thing. And, you know, and people do this with events and things like that. You know, you don't just start up your local event and it's just like, bam, let's do it really big. You sort of see if there's interest, and then you can move to the bigger event center and all that sort of stuff. So it's a little bit like starting an event, because you don't know if people are going to come on board with you for what you're doing.
Right.
But at least it is free to subscribe, so we don't have the problem of, you know, you don't have to pay to subscribe to it or anything.
Right.
Although that has been suggested many times. But I'd rather run something that makes money from the advertising and hits like 10,000 people than perhaps have like 300 or 400 subscribers, make the same money, but it's a very, very tiny group.
Yeah.
I mean, some people would totally disagree with that, but I like the bigger reach.
Sure. What kind of a time are you putting into this? Is this like a full-time thing or hours?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not sort of doing 80-hour weeks or anything like that, but yeah, this is the full-time thing.
Yeah. So when you started Ruby Weekly, you were coming off of doing a bunch of Ruby development. That was very much in your world. Do you find as you're starting these newsletters that are in different topics, you're not as able to curate them as well or edit them as well? It sounds like you do have outside editors for some of these.
Yeah, so like Bitcoin and that, I wouldn't really be very good at doing that.
Yeah.
That said, I think one of the things I have developed during this is just a very good nose for what is good content in an area, whether I'm actually that experienced with it or not. Mm. And sometimes that fails. So there have been a few experiences with JavaScript where someone's written something that's just like not totally wrong, but isn't perhaps the best practice, and people will kind of grill you for it. So nothing like really horrible's made it in, but certain things that perhaps, you know, if I was like a full-time JavaScript developer, I would have kind of thought, well, that smells a bit funny, and not include it. It's not the best of the best. But there is a certain talent. Obviously, journalists have this. You know, I've worked as a freelance writer sort of many, many, many years ago before doing the Ruby stuff. But kind of journalists have to very quickly look at an area that perhaps they're not super familiar with, work out how to get a story out of it, what smells good, what doesn't. So I've kind of had to build up those skills with these things as well. So even though I'm not like a database expert, you know, I've kind of done my time on it, but I'm not, you know, a super duper expert, I can still kind of see what's coming up in some of the papers that are coming up and some of the releases. What is the BS and what isn't the BS? Like, it's not too difficult to cut through it.
Mm-hmm. You have an office space, right? You don't work at a home for this?
No. I tried working at home for a while, but it's a complete nightmare with two kids and, you know, wife wants to constantly, you know, drag you into things and this, that, and the other. So, yes, I know I have an office for it, which is quite large, actually, for mostly just me. So, but it's good because it's kind of almost turned into like a man cave, you know, like people would have at homes. Being in England, we have an absolutely tiny, tiny house. So there just wasn't the space there to do it. Once the kids turned up, but it's worked out really well. Actually, just other people that I've spoken to in the Ruby space who've gone on to get an office. So I think Marc-Andre Coinier is one who's in a very similar situation. I've spoken to people and they're just like, oh, I got an office and just like my productivity's shot through the roof. So
yeah.
It's a bit like when I bought my first Mac. It's like, wow, I can actually get my work done now, you know.
It's interesting how much of a psychological impact having a separate space will give you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure part of it was, like, the lack of distractions, and also part of it of, like, I go to the office and that's where I do work.
Yeah, I must admit, you know, I goof off quite a lot. You know, I'm a massive Reddit fan, massive YouTube fan. Mm. So, you know, I get my time in with that. But, yeah, no, it's really the distraction thing. You know, the whole ramping up and ramping down and getting in the zone and all that type of stuff that programmers talk about all the time. Mm. You know, it still applies even if you're not coding all the time if you're trying to get your head into anything. So, yeah, I found that definitely works for me.
Mm. What are your favorite subreddits?
Oh, let's see. Like, actually safer work ones?
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, I just love the things like WTF and a lot of the humor ones and things like cringe pics and stuff that's just, like, really tasteless. Mm. I'm trying to think of any serious ones. There is, you know, the computer science one, CompSci, is not too bad. There are a couple that are about, like, computer science papers, which are okay, but have really kind of fallen down the list lately. Mm. But I've got to admit, and the Ruby subreddit's not too bad, which, disclosure, I am a moderator of that. But no, I must admit, most of the ones I look at are just things that are really absolutely, you know, off the wall crazy. I don't go to Reddit expecting a serious discussion.
Sure.
You know, I'm on a few of them, like books and stuff like that, but it's really about the craziness for mm-hmm. me with Reddit.
Gotcha. So what's next for you? We've talked a lot about the past and the current. Do you have any idea of what the next, the future looks like?
Well, that's actually one of the reasons why I'm here in Boston. I'm not allowed to discuss it, but, you know, I am talking to people about various different ways that this can go. Mm-hmm. But kind of independent of that, I think some of the ways it will go is more into, like, actual content development. So rather than just linking to stuff that, you know, we think is good, is actually, you know, producing our own stuff again, which is what I already did with Ruby Inside. But now I also have the place to promote said content. So there is, you know, some opportunities there.
Mm-hmm.
But really at the moment, it's kind of more of the same at the moment. Just one of the things I guess I've learned is that just constantly diversifying by subject isn't always the best approach, because it does take time to ramp them up and get them up to speed, and they don't always work out.
Mm-hmm.
So one that kind of is a failure for us was Dart Weekly, for example.
Mm.
Dart being the, I'm not sure how to put this, but kind of Google's competition for JavaScript in some sense. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't work out, you know, and it's one that
weren't enough subscribers? Is that what?
Well, we got to like a couple of thousand subscribers, but then there just wasn't any growth. And we didn't find any kind of organic growth. People weren't talking about it in the same way that we do with the others.
Yeah.
And I must admit, just looking at the Dart space directly, I'm not seeing that big growth like you're seeing with perhaps something like a Go or a Node or anything like that. So, you know, we have failures. And I think what I've learned from that is not to just keep saying, right, well, I can do a newsletter about bananas and apples and this, that, and the other. It's not just to do that. It's sometimes you do need to focus and how can I make the ones I've got and the audience that I've got, how can I do more for them and make that better than just constantly trying to get, I want to get a million subscribers.
Yeah.
So it's funny how your goals change. It's not always about that core metric. You sometimes have to, you know, double down on what you've got.
Yeah. Do you do experiments or work trying to optimize things like open rate and click rates and things like that?
Yeah, I used to do a ton of it on the sign-up pages and kind of reached a happy point with that. If you go to like JavaScriptWeekly.com and things like that now, the way it's laid out and the way it works is pretty much what were the winners of that, of those experiments. But again, it's just all about having time and, you know, to do those sort of things. But I often try different content experiments. So we've got a Twitter account, JavaScript Daily, which now has like 65,000 followers. Totally organic, never really super pushed it, but it's just gone really, really well. And so this is just an experiment off the back of what we already do.
JavaScript Daily. So that tweets daily links to JavaScript?
Pretty much. I mean, it's like 5 or 6 links a day.
Yeah.
Sort of, and they come through the same system as the newsletter items. So we can put more stuff out onto that that doesn't get into the newsletter as well.
Oh, gotcha.
So, yeah, it's just worked really well. But sometimes experiments work, sometimes they don't.
Sure. Have you experimented with the length of the newsletter?
This was something that JavaScript Weekly's editor, Dr. Axel Rauschmann, was really keen on. Like, sometimes things would go right really long and we'd see what the open rate was, and sometimes things would be really short, we'd see what it was. It doesn't vary a great deal. I think we found if you have a newsletter and it's focused on being short, then it's important to keep with that. If it's not one that's focused on it, people don't seem to care what it is. So yeah, yes and no, I guess is the answer to that. It's important sometimes, but not always.
Okay. I've seen you tweet sometimes about like, oh, like open rate tanked this week for some reason in Gmail or something like that.
That's usually content. Like if we mention a word, like if there's like someone says buy now, or we won't mention the word, even less like the word tax or something, that can set Google off. Like they are so contextual nowadays. It's not just all about, you mentioned Viagra. Like if you ran a Viagra newsletter, they'd be fine with using the word Viagra. If I mention Viagra, it's going to tank.
Right.
And likewise, if the Viagra newsletter mentioned, I don't know.
JavaScript.
JavaScript. Or like, you know, mesothelioma or like something like that. They're going to have the same problem. So Google's become very, very clever now. Mm. It's not just the SEO and the search rankings they're focusing on. It's stuff like email as well.
So what do you do when that happens?
Work out what it is.
Yeah, figure out what the words are.
Yeah, sometimes do a resend, but it depends how much a hit is. It's usually a very small hit. But if it's a big hit, work out what it is, fix, resend. And because MailChimp gives us the stuff to say, right, so-and-so didn't open this, it's easy. We just say resend it to everyone who didn't open it.
Oh, sure.
Or everyone who's on Gmail who didn't open it, if it's them that got the big hit.
Right.
And so then people aren't annoyed by receiving a ton of email. Yeah. So that tends to work quite well.
That's cool. What are you excited about these days?
Ooh, that's a tricky question. Yeah, I guess, you know, I've seen a lot of stuff going on with Node and that. And I must admit, I've actually been a little bit bearish on Node, even though I have a Node Weekly and done a lot of stuff there. It's been very interesting, though, to see the development of Go. I'm really quite interested in that. Kind of, it brings so many things together, and I've seen so many developers I respect getting excited about Go that I wish I'd kind of got in on the ground floor of a newsletter there, but there's already a couple, I think, in that space, so it's not worth fighting over at the moment. But very excited about that. And I'm more into like the back end, the more of the kind of the server side things. Even though I do the JavaScript weekly stuff, it's still the back end. It's the server stuff. It's, you know, the databases. That's what I'm interested in. But whether I say it's anything super excites me right now, not particularly. I guess just the ongoing development of the web platform from a just from a kind of a, almost an emotional point of view. It's really nice to see so many developers from different areas coming together, getting stuff running within a browser. Like we're seeing with ImScript, and you know, you can now have like a, you know, just a C++ developer who's working with SDL and or OpenGL or whatever. They can compile their stuff and bring it onto the web. We're seeing that with Unity's coming on, all the experiments that Firefox and the Unreal guys have been doing. I think that is very exciting, and that kind of ties into my role as a chair of the O'Reilly Fluent Conference, which is a web platform conference. So I guess that interests me. I haven't done a huge amount of work on it myself, but I find that very interesting. I think it's only going to continue. And possibly even with the Ruby world as well, with the MRuby thing that Matt's and I know a few others have been working on. You know, it's very easy to turn that now, put that onto the web within Script. And
what is MRuby?
MRuby, I can't remember what it stands for now, but it's kind of like a miniature version of Ruby that Matt kind of put his focus on.
That's right.
About a year ago or so.
Yeah.
I think they released 1.0 like within the last couple of months.
For like low power kind of devices, like lower processing
power
it's, or something?
Yeah, it doesn't have like everything that, you know, full fat Ruby has. Yeah, and I've seen people compile this down for the web within Script, and which I find very interesting. You know, actually could make it very easily possible to do like your front-end scripting in Ruby, which perhaps you shouldn't be doing that, but it could become an option. Because, you know, JavaScript now is so ridiculously fast. If you can get a virtual machine down to a certain size, what's the big deal with that as opposed to running, say, Flash or something? So, yeah, front-end scripting in Ruby, well, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the browser is so much like the universal runtime.
Exactly, yeah.
And, like, JavaScript is just kind of going to be is like the future compilation target.
Yeah.
Like it'll happen to be what runs in the browser, but maybe no one will even use it.
Exactly.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. So all very good stuff.
Yeah. How do you like organizing FluentCon?
It's an interesting experience. Yeah. I'm not an event person. I don't go to many events. It's just because of who I am. It's not because I necessarily hate events. It's just they don't tend to mesh with me very well in the way I work. But working on it with O'Reilly has been very interesting. And I've had a very easy time compared to a lot of people who do events because O'Reilly puts on so many events. They have a full-time team. You know, this isn't like a small thing. It's not a thing where someone's putting in like $10,000 and is scared they're going to, you know, not be able to make payroll next week.
Yeah.
You know, they have people like, you know, sort of about 30 people that are full-time employed just to do conferences.
Wow.
So there's people to help with the speakers. There's people doing, you know, sponsorships. There's people, just everything is there. And the AV teams and things like that, which they don't employ, they contract those in, but they are always top-notch as well. So my job and that of my fellow chair, Simon St. Laurent, who's sort of a well-known name in O'Reilly circles, you know, we share the work, but we don't have to get involved with a lot of the logistics.
So you're doing talk selection.
Talk selection, kind of just shaping the conference. It's much like doing a newsletter. It's curating what's interesting out there, who should we bring in. And just email, just tons and tons of email. So I guess that kind of always circles back to where we began with the email newsletters, is just my whole life is just endless email. So
yeah, I remember being real psyched when you responded to an email like 5 years ago that I sent you, because you were the Ruby Inside guy and like still responsive and friendly and helpful and all that.
Yeah, no, I try and do that still now, but you may be waiting a few days. It's yeah, unfortunately.
Sure.
But I've learned so much stuff now about what is it about an email that sort of gets you more likely to get your reply.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, focus on one thing, make sure the request is really simple. If it's a question, just keep it to one question, really simple. And mm-hmm. those things get replies like really quickly. But
right.
when someone's like, oh, well, I've been thinking about doing this, and what do you think about that? And, oh, you know, can we do this? And, oh, can I meet you here? And when it's that in one email, it's like, right, that's a week's time. I'm going to be replying to that.
Yep. And so that goes in like, I'll respond to this later, which turns into maybe
exactly.
never. And
yeah. So yeah. there's a life pro tip for you, which actually is another subreddit I should recommend. Life Pro Tips, I think it's called, or something.
Mm.
Always lots of really cool tips of how to get on in life. So
I think it's, only a little bit appropriate that you're getting a bunch of email now, given how much you're sending. So
yeah, exactly.
You have to be on the receiving end sometimes too.
Oh, I tell you, I get more I'm on vacation email than anyone, you know.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
I actually use legitimate reply to addresses for the newsletters. So when JavaScript Weekly goes out and it's just like before Independence Day or something like that, it's like, yeah.
You must get like 5,000 out
good
of
fun.
Office
It's really, really fun, yeah.
Does that doesn't go to your personal email?
It does.
Really?
I monitor everything that comes back.
Oh, my goodness.
It's not too difficult.
Yeah.
I just sit there with my phone while it's doing it and just go, yeah, archive, archive. So.
I can't believe you don't have a filter for that.
Yeah, well, why? You know, like, I like to see if anyone sends something back.
You want
it's important to have that engagement,
mm-hmm.
Partly because that means you don't get in the spam filter anymore. If someone replies to you,
right.
it makes you important. So, yeah, I like to make sure to pick up on anyone that replies.
Yeah, cool. I want to wrap up because I know you have to get to a thing. Is there anything else that you want to cover or like a question I should ask you that I haven't touched on?
I don't think so, actually. No, I think I'll be quite boring and sort of say that it was pretty good. I mean, obviously, you know, just for anyone who's listening, you know, I came into this without any prep whatsoever. It's like, I'm in town, and they're like, quick, come in.
Don't
it's
apologize.
Like, yeah, quick, come in. So, yeah. So,
I mean, I didn't have neither of us had prep. We just kind of
well,
sat
no, exactly,
down and started
yeah.
chatting.
Exactly.
But so. I'm glad we could make it work. It was nice that we could snag you while you were in Boston. We could put you in the studio with nice quality. And it's good for me to actually meet you in person because we've been talking online occasionally for probably more than half a decade now.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it's yeah. funny just how long the whole Ruby and Rails, well, the Rails thing has been around. What's it, 10 years this year? So
yeah. So I remember publishing a screencast, Vim for Rails Developers,
yeah,
like
yeah.
5 or 6 years ago, and you like did a review for that. And
yeah.
That was huge for me at the time because you had a ton of readers, and I got a bunch of sales from that, and it was like you were in the good guy category.
Yeah,
for
that was before Fortbolt, I think.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, well before that. So
yeah.
Thanks for that back in the day.
Awesome.
And thanks for coming in. It was great to talk to you.
Definitely. Thanks.
Cool. If people want to get in touch with you, what's a good way to do that?
Probably the best way is actually to tweet me because I actually do reply to all of those really mm-hmm. quickly. So @PeterC. And if it's something that you just go to email, then yeah, take it from there.
Cool. And if you want any of those weekly newsletters, they're all pretty easy to find.
Yeah,
JavaScriptWeekly.com.
You can just Google for it, yeah. Or you can go to CooperPress.com where we list most of them, not all of them. But yeah, they're easy to find.
Cool. Awesome. If you'd like to access the show notes for this episode, you can go to thoughtbot.com/giantrobots/102. Also, we've just released a new workshop called Getting Started with iOS Development. If you want to check that out, you can go to learn.thoughtbot.com/getting-started-with-iOS. Today's show was produced and edited by Tom Obarski. Thanks for listening.